agenda item number 9 here, pertaining to removal of a portion of campgrounds in the Ware River. Mr. Stack.
Yeah, this is a little something a little different for the commission to entertain. We don't get this kind of request very often. This is a public hearing. As you recall, last month we requested authorization to advertise for a public hearing this month to address this issue. A little background on why we're here. We got a request from Ward Oyster Company to lease a portion of ground in the Ware River, but it actually is currently clam ground that was set aside by the commission, and I'll go into a little more detail on that in a minute. Because it's not public bailer ground, we felt that we could accept the application, but in the interest of fairness to the applicant, that we would not process it any further than acceptance to see whether the commission would consider removing any portion of this public clam ground as clam ground and convert it back to just state bottom land that could be leased for shellfish propagation. So that was the reason for the request of the public hearing. You did approve that last month. We did advertise this, and therefore we're here today for the actual public hearing. That said, the commission did set aside additional clam grounds, as had their reference, for public use in the Ware River in both 1929 and in 1930. Again, these grounds are not part of the Baylor survey as we know it, nor are they added by the General Assembly action. They were actually set aside by commission action and declared public clam grounds, and under this classification, we would typically not lease these areas and we would typically not accept applications for these areas, or we would just, you know, tell people that we can't lease them. Due to the ongoing resurgence of oyster aquaculture, however, particularly the use of cages for oyster culture, suitable bottom for such activity is becoming increasingly difficult to find and or lease due to other competing uses of these near-shore shallow water areas. Again, Ward Oyster Company, whose owner is Mr. John Vigliotta, requested to lease approximately 100 acres of such bottomlands at the northwesternmost end of an area of the additional clam grounds that were set aside in 1930. Again, while we accepted the application, we can't lease the area because of its current designation. So what you see on this first map is this large area extending, this is the York River, this is the Ware River area. The area we're actually going to talk about is up here, but this is the area that was set aside by commission action in 1929. So all of this area was set aside. And we believe, based on the minutes, which there are copies in your packet of the minutes, of the 1929 meeting, that this was probably due to a petition or some action from clammers in the area requesting this area be set aside so that it would not be leased. The commission did do that. Again, there's commission minutes to indicate this additional area, which now we're zoomed in on the sort of the mouth of the Ware River off the Mobjack Bay. And starting with this line right here and upstream to this line is the area of the 1930 area that was set aside the next year by the commission. Again, this is the 1929 area and it goes to the south. These are public bailer grounds, these two. These are leases that exist currently. This is another piece of public ground. This is the area of the Ward Oyster Company application, which is overlapped on top of the public ground. So based on the minutes from 1930, there apparently between 1929 and 1930, there was an additional request, the minutes specifically say by 13 clammers, to set aside some additional area, and it's not specified exactly where that area is, but if you read the minutes the way I interpret them, it's probably somewhere in this area in this deeper section. And when it was presented to the commission, Mr. Fred Rudiger, who was a commission surveyor at the time, indicated that he believed the best thing to do was to set aside an area from Jarvis Point to Windmill Point. And I believe, being a surveyor and following Mr. Rudiger's work, that he probably picked this because it was two prominent land features that was easy to strike a line between. Now, I think at the time, Jarvis Point extended out further. It's eroded away over the years. But regardless, it made a good area that the law enforcement could probably monitor better than some other area over here where there was no prominent feature. So that was his recommendation, and that's what the commission adopted. So that's where the 1930 area got set by those boundaries and just attached to the 1929 area. And it's been that way ever since. So that's the history lesson part of this. So again, we did, because you blessed the public hearing procedure to look at this issue, we did run an ad, and we got a couple phone calls about this, but really we've gotten no objection up to this point from the clammers or the public. We had a couple people who do clam in the area, we believe, who called and asked questions about it. The general feedback we got was that they don't really clam this far up anymore. In your original evaluation that you got last week, there was a paragraph about patentong gear. In your evaluation that's in the book today, that paragraph is deleted. We believe that people couldn't patentong up here per the law, but that's only for public oyster grounds. So they can patentong up in this area for clams. But regardless of that, we continue to process the application or the request to remove this. So the issues here are that, you know, reclassification of public trust land does require careful consideration and evaluation of both the past, current, and potential future uses of the area. We did research the minutes, and I've explained that to you previously. Staff has found that some of the area within this 1930 area is currently used for hall seine activities, and changing this from current clam ground to areas that could be leased could present conflicts with the use of that method for hall seining if we were to lease some of these areas. Additionally, portions of the area along the shore contain SAV. So again, this is our oyster ground map. This is the 1930 area. That's the application. This is public ground. This is a map showing the coverage of the 2010 SAV area. I just picked a year. This is one of the years we have on our system. But these green areas indicate areas where VIMS has actually found SAV present in the area. If you look at previous other years, it's similar to this. Again, some of this area along the shoreline also has SAV coverage in different densities. And Mr. Orth is here today. I think he could address that if you have specific questions. So again, having it as clam ground gives it some protection from leasing, although in theory they could patentong up here and they could patentong in areas where there's SAV, although it's unlikely because they're so shallow. And typically they wouldn't patentong in areas that shallow. But the shallow areas could be harvested if they had clams by hand rake or hand method, where you could actually get out of the boat. While staff would factor all these other uses and issues with SAV, should this area be converted to leasable ground, we would take that on a case-by-case basis per each application. And, of course, leaving it as clam ground would eliminate that issue because we wouldn't be leasing it to start with. Again, the area of the ward oyster ground application generally in this area, I've had a number of conversations with Mr. Vigliotti. While he did apply for a pretty large chunk here, his real interest is a somewhat smaller area within that rectangle, but he kind of just applied for a block in here. He's expressed some interest in an area to the south as well, should this area, any of this area, be removed. Again, if this is removed and we took applications, each application would be evaluated on its own merits, and if there's SAV issues, our policy is not to lease areas that have SAV. We did contact our law enforcement division about this, and they provided information that other activities in the area could certainly be impacted, including hall seining and other uses of the area. I will note that there is a marina in this area up here that has some sailing activities that might also conflict with leasing, particularly if cages are used in shallow. But again, if we got an application in that area, we'd address that issue on a case-by-case basis should the area be open to leasing. While law enforcement did indicate that any revision to this area would not necessarily prevent a law enforcement issue because they can enforce the line wherever it's placed, they did indicate that they believe that this area should be left as clam ground for conservation reasons. We contacted Jim Wesson with our Conservation and Policing Department, and he indicated that he believed large areas of this were suitable for agriculture-type activities, and that his recommendation would be that it be removed and open to leasing, subject to the normal public interest review. BIMS did provide comments. We contacted Mr. Orth, and they clearly indicated that there was SAV coverage, as you see on this map, and that they had concerns about leasing the area and impacts that could have. But again, we would work with them on any application if you open this area, and if it had SAV and they recommended against leasing it, we usually would take their advice and recommend against that. So leasing in this area would allow for both traditional oyster culture, just on bottom, normal agriculture as was done in the past. It would also allow for cage aquaculture on a lease, and could actually provide some areas where clam aquaculture planning could occur if a leaseholder wanted to attempt plant clams within a suitable area within some of these areas. Again, Mr. Wesson indicated from some of his surveys of this area that if there are clams in this area, they're pretty minimal. And we don't believe that, you know, someone may speak today contrary, but we don't believe that the clammers, patent pond clammers, really work this far up anymore. They do work up some of the 1929 area, certainly, but not this 1930 area. So based on this information we've obtained, and after reviewing the Code of Virginia and the public comments we did receive, we do recommend to remove the entire 1930 area. So that would be this area down to here, and then all of this area encompassing it. To allow for acceptance of applications, which would go through our standard public interest review, and then leasing in areas only where appropriate. If approved, this would allow for a continued processing of the currently pending Ward Oyster Company application. Again, we accepted it. We have not run the public notice yet. But if you do remove an area where his application is, we would start that process. And people would still have the opportunity to comment and object to that if warranted. It would also make the remaining area available for acceptance of additional applications for shellfish leasing, again, subject to our normal public interest review. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. I think Mr. Wesson is here, and Mr. Orth is in the room as well, if you had questions related to those two issues. And the matters really before y'all as to what you.
Thank you, Mr. Stagg.
Questions from the commission. Mr. Ballard.
Do we have a precedent for releasing grounds that were protected before and the application process? I'm curious what the current, I think is described in our packets, land rush that's happening for leases, what sort of can of worms this could open up with everyone applying for this ground, what the process would be, and then whether we get a ton of applications for baler grounds and other protected areas so that someone's first in line.
Right. I guess there's a two-pronged answer to that. If you would remove any or all of this 1930 section, it would today become available. And I would suspect that we will process Mr. Vigliotti's Ward Oyster Company. He may have put in a second application for this southern area south of that piece of baler ground. I think we'll get some other applications in the area. For the entire area, maybe, maybe not. But as we stated earlier, some of these types of areas are very sought after at the moment. So I think, I don't know if I call it a land rush, but it'll be no different than any other part of the state where we're seeing a real upsurge in applications. Last year, as you may know, we had 340 applications. We typically have had anywhere from 80 to 120 in past years. We've got 56 already this year, which averages out to one per day so far this year. So you'd think eventually we'd run out of areas to lease, but so far we're still getting the same number we got percentage-wise last year. So That answers the first question. The second question about Baylor ground is that, you know, we won't take an application for Baylor ground because it's set aside by the Constitution. It cannot be leased. And if the ground is set aside by the General Assembly, we also take the same action that we can't accept the lease. If you want to lease this area, you need to go to the General Assembly and have the ground converted to some other use. Ground that is set aside by the commission can be unset aside by the commission. Is there a precedent? Yes, it has happened. It's rare. It has happened. Ground has been set aside by the commission more often than it's been taken back. But there are a few instances in from my research where ground that's been set aside by the commission for some specific purpose has been taken back. But again, and we understand the issue here of a Pandora's box type issue is, you know, if we remove this, are we going to remove more? Well, I think we would do a public interest review and bring it to the commission to determine, is it appropriate? Is this ground serving the purpose that it was set aside in 1934 still today? And is that interest overrule converting it back to leasing where possibly it will serve a better interest, public interest? And that's why we brought it to y'all to make that determination.
The applications would be on a first-come, first-served basis.
Absolutely. Sorry. They would be on a first-come, first-served basis.
Ms. Erskine.
You mentioned something to in that set-aside area. Currently, there was a marina.
There is a marina up in local, Jim may know better, but up in this area, there's a creek, I think, that goes up here, and there's a marina, and they do some sailing-type events, and that was mentioned as a potential conflict. Should someone apply for a lease there as to whether it would be appropriate to lease it, particularly if cages were going to be put on. And if you get a lease, you have the right to put cages, subject to the regulation that says you can't create a navigation hazard. I think there's an area here that we would not recommend leasing because of that activity.
I guess my question around the marina, there's a condemnation then around that area. Is that right?
There may be a seasonal condemnation, although we do, you know, lease ground in areas where there's seasonal condemnations. If you can relay, we still lease those areas, and even if it's closed, if it's open to relaying, that could still be done. But we would factor some of that in too to an application as to whether it's appropriate to lease related not only to activity from the marina, but the fact that there may be closures there as well.
Thank you,
Mr. Clark.
You know, as we talked about a little while ago, so much land and, you know, is being taken over.
Yep.
And once it's taken over, you know, like the Hall Saners, once it's taken over, they're not allowed to hold there again. And I know, see a couple places here where Hall Saners have worked. So, you know, you got to keep in mind, we're taking all of our bottom away from the commercial fishermen a little bit along. You know, every year. So, you know, that's, you know, I don't have an issue with some of this, but all of it I have an issue with as far as taking it all away. Because where does it stop? You know, the rush that's been going on now, there's a lot of places where we used to work can't work.
And we understand that, and that's why I raised the Hall Saning. We understand that there is Hall Saning in some of this area. Now, as an alternate, because I figured this would come up. This was really sort of my original recommendation when I was working on this. But after getting more input from other people, you know, we did go with the recommendation to remove the entire 1930 area. This would be an alternate possibility of just removing this very western two sections. We could align it with the existing piece of public ground and go basically on that same line to the shoreline. It actually lines up with the end of a road over here. And then we could connect a line here between these two pieces of public ground. So this could be an alternate if the commission's not comfortable with removing the entire 1930 area and placing it back into the leasing, or either one of these. Obviously, Mr. Vigliotti would like to see you remove the northern one because he definitely would like to lease that. He's expressed an interest in some of this area as well. But so this would be a smaller step, and we could still get a request, you know, after today to remove some more of this other area again, and maybe we'd come back again. If you indicate today that you're not interested in anything beyond anything, you know, I think we'll tell people that in the future. This has been brought to the commission. The commission at the time was not interested. Now, 5-10 years from now, maybe we could revisit it. But so this would be an alternative of a smaller area. But again, this would still be removing some ground. And
Mr. Close.
I'm not saying not interested. It's just there's when you go look at a shoreline or go somewhere and do Hall Saining in particular, there's only a few spots that you can, you know, you just can't go do it anywhere you want. So it narrows you down to where you can and can't do it. I'm not opposed to not having some of this to lease bottom. I'm just opposed to certain places because once it's taken away, you can never, you know, commercial fishermen can never work there again.
And, you know, to be honest, the Hall Saining was raised, you know, a couple of different times, but I haven't heard directly from any Hall Saining. I hope to hear from them because I wanted to know what their opinion was and where do they do this activity. You know, could we address that in our recommendation? And perhaps there's somebody here today or is we're going to have a public hearing and there'll be public comment if anyone's right here. But we did advertise this. We tried to get the word out. It was on the website. So that's the best we can do is up to this point. And we do understand your concern, and we have that same concern. We don't want to take away areas. Because you're right. Once there's a lease issued here, then that person has the right to that lease, and Hall Saining activity would not be allowed on that lease.
Mr. Zedra.
Am I right in this 1930 area, that area is open to all the commercial watermen, right?
Yes.
So why would we want to take sort of food out of their mouth to give a private individual that property for individual profit?
Well, I think the rationale of our recommendation is based on what we've heard from both the limited information we got from industry and the information from law enforcement and from our repletion department is that they are not using this particular part of this area. They're using some of the 1929 area out in Mopjack Bay, and you may hear differently if someone speaks from the audience, but that we don't believe there's really any claiming activity of any consequence going on in this limited area at the mouth of the Ware River. It's a little unclear why this wasn't set aside in 1929, and it came back the next year. All we have is the minutes. There was a request from some clamors to add this in, but it was not included in 1929 when the commission addressed this larger area. I can't answer that question.
Follow-up question, then why would you request that whole area? I mean, if you only got an application for a smaller, why are you requesting the whole area be?
Well, some of that's based on conversations with our repletion department that there are other areas within this that would be appropriate for current aquaculture methods for growing oysters, and possibly could be leased for clams if someone is willing to plant clams here. The natural population of clams does not appear to be at a level that it warrants the public coming in here and trying to make a day's live, you know, a day's work. So that was, we struggled with this, and that's why I gave you the alternate smaller area, because initially that was my thinking. Let's address the actual request we got, which was a pretty small area. But with the information I got, this is what I came up with, and certainly it's subject to, this is why we brought it to y'all, because it's again, it's this public trust land, and how it's used is very important.
Mr. Sessoms.
You said earlier Baylor Ground was authorized by the General Assembly and the other public ground by the commission. Just out of curiosity, how many acres, I guess, of commission-authorized land is there in the Commonwealth of Virginia, waters of the Commonwealth?
Probably have to do some research. I do have that in a document, and if I had thought of that, I'd have brought it with me today because I could have reeled it right off. This 1929 clam ground, you saw how big that was. That's one of the largest pieces of ground that was set aside by commission action. Baylor Ground was all set aside and is protected by the Constitution, so it was set aside really by the General Assembly action, but it is protected within the Constitution of Virginia. And we can't lease that. I mean, we just cannot lease it. The General Assembly would have to take some kind of action to do that. And there are a number of pieces of public ground in Virginia that were set aside by the General Assembly after the Baylor survey. And we can't lease those either without General Assembly removing them from the public system. So the only grounds that fit this category are grounds that the commission itself took action. And there's these clam grounds. I think there's some other clam grounds in Hampton Roads. There's some very small areas of public ground that have been set aside by the commission, but not many. We have a piece of public ground in the Broad Bay and Lynn Haven system. And those are subject to commission action. The commission can decide that they're not serving the public interest as public ground, and they could be converted to some other use. It's a long answer to your question, but I hope it kind of answered your question. But some of these areas, basically, no. We would never come to the commission and say, this piece of Baylor ground right here, we want to propose leasing in it, because by law we could not do that. It would have to go to the General Assembly, and they'd have to take some kind of action to remove it.
No, you answered it.
I don't know the acreage. I can't really give you.
It doesn't sound like a huge area of ground that the commission generated.
Right.
Or approved.
But I think the General Assembly, the commission has generally deferred to General Assembly action with these types of designations. There is a section in the code that clearly allows people to petition the commission to request clam ground be set aside by the commission. That's in the code. There is no such section about public oyster ground in the code. I think the commission could do it. They have done it. But there is a mechanism within the code. We have a pending request right now at the mouth of the York River where this 1929 ground goes, some additional area that we've gotten a request from clamors that area be set aside because we have applications in there, and they're protesting. And they say they do work that area. So you'll be seeing that at some point in the not-too-distant future for commission action as to whether to convert those into grounds like this where the commission set aside.
Mr. Ballard.
Am I correct in assuming that the hall centers or fishermen would have the opportunity to oppose the lease when the
Absolutely.
Application gets processed?
Anyone can object to a lease. Or whatever the hall seiners, the marina, private citizens, if they think it's coming too close to their shoreline and the cages would interfere with them, or any other valid reason, we would accept and make that part of our evaluation. And if we can't resolve it, we'll be here before you. And the commission will make the final decision as to whether it's appropriate to lease it or not. We could be back with this. If you take any of this out and it includes the Ward Oyster Company, we could be back here in a couple of months if it's protested for some reason.
Any other questions? Mr. Close.
I don't have too much of a problem where, Mr. Ward wants his ground at, but there's a couple places on there that I know when this goes out for up, it will be done forever. So, I don't have a problem with different sections, but as fast as the land's going to be leased up, it's going to be gone in no time. I think we should really look into this a little deeper as far as what sections should be leased and what shouldn't be. It's all for public, but once you turn it over to private, then that's it. That's my 2 cents.
That would, I would imagine, have to be done on an application by application basis. Mr. Stagg, I do have a question. Actually, I have 2 questions.
Sure.
How shallow is this area up there?
It varies a lot, let me go back to the SAV map, because wherever you see SAV, it is very shallow, because SAV will only grow in shallow water habitat. Out here, it is fairly deep. So you have a real transition here between areas that, and this point at Jarvis Point is shallow out for quite a ways, because this point used to go out further and it's kind of eroded away. So it's a big sandy bar there. Let's see if you can really see it. You can't see it in the photographs because I have ground turned on. But anyway, it varies a lot, but generally speaking, this is relatively shallow all through here and all down through here. But as you get out where this public ground is, it gets relatively deep. And that's the area that we think, if there was patentonguing and clamming going on, it would probably be more out in these areas. Because they don't patentong up in, they can't get a boat up into the shallow area. Now, could you hand rake clams up in this area? Certainly, at low tide, you could get out of a boat and walk around and you be in knee-deep water or less. So there's all kinds of depth variation here, but as you can see, it's pretty shallow all the way around this point and relatively shallow here. Again, I know Bob Orth is here. He might be able to address that question, that's depth related to SAV as well.
I share Mr. Close's concern over impacts on hull sanding operations. They are geographically limited operations. Do we have any firm data that or information that hull sanding has and still continues to go on here?
I guess what I could offer is if the commission, you know, wanted to table this today, we could work with law enforcement with no more specific actual sites here where hull sanding activity occurs, and possibly we could even map those for you. And I didn't do that for this, but map specific areas in here where hull sanding has traditionally been done, and that could affect you know, areas y'all think it's appropriate to remove, if any. I don't think there's.
I
know that there actually was some hull sanding done up here around Jarvis Point, but my understanding is it doesn't. That hasn't been done up there because it's too shallow.
Right, but
Mr. Clark,
what you have on the whole lease area that's possible to be leased?
Yes.
There is activity there.
Absolutely, and I
so agree. That's,
we know that that's true. The
right.
Specific locations I can't give you right this second, but we could provide that if the commission feels that's necessary.
As I recall, Vince had worked with some of the hull sanders in that area on other issues here. Maybe it's time to open this up and get some more information from the audience. Any other questions from the commission for Mr. Stagg? If not, Mr. Orth, would you come forward here? Maybe you can clarify, shed some light on all this.
Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you very much. Please state your name for the record, sir.
Dr. Bob Orth from Virginia Institute of Marine Science. And actually, I've got a slide in my presentation of this area because I wanted to show you some of the stuff that we're doing because we will present a presentation on the propeller scarring. But generally, I mean, we watch these areas very carefully because of the propeller scarring.
Bring that up. Would it help?
I've got this. Yeah, actually.
If the commission would like.
If that helps clarify the situation we're in now, sure.
Okay, this is Ware Point, and this is the general area where there's grass beds. You know, we watch the propeller scarring because that's part of the effort that we have that's ongoing to make sure that we protect these grass beds. The primary areas of hull sanding are essentially right here at Ware Neck and generally here what's called Four Point Marsh. We rarely see hull sanders in this area along the shoreline. There's a lot of hull sanding right here along the Severn River, and this is the Ware River. So a lot of the hull sanding that we see is here in the Severn, off around Four Point Marsh, and here in off Ware Point. So those are the three primary areas that you know, we see. And again, you know, these spots are very important for some of the recreational people for fishing for speckled trout. But generally, we don't see the hull sanding in this area here. And again, because we say that because we don't see propeller scars. Most of the scarring that we see, which is minimal now, is occurring pretty much like around here in Ware Point, Four Point Marsh, and along the mouth of the Severn. So that's generally the major issues that I see that would Mr. Close would be interested in. You know, it's not saying that it doesn't occur, but I think what the haul centers need are bottoms that are essentially clear of debris. And a lot of these areas that we work in, there's a lot of stumps and stuff like that. But generally, Weir Point, Four Point Marsh, and the mouth of the Severn are pretty much free and clear of debris. And again, we see there are definitely certain spots the haul centers like to work. And again, that's evident by the minimal scarring that we see, which again we'll point out in our presentation subsequent to this this talk.
Okay, thank you.
Can we turn the lights on? And I'm here for any additional questions regarding the halls. Yes, sir.
Yes, I just have a question. What I think I just heard you say was, are you suggesting that prop scars in these areas are associated with only with commercial activity?
When we see repetitive scarring, because we've looked at this really carefully, and the way the scarring is done, because, again, this was part of the presentation that we made to the commission perhaps before you were here, there's a certain type of scarring that we look very carefully, and that is scarring that goes directly towards certain points of land, and where the scarring occurs in repetitive fashion, then that's what we have assumed to be haul staining scars from propellers. And if they're like if there's an occasional scar, we do see recreational people that will fish in here, but generally the people that are fishing have their motors up because they know that that's not going to help when they're fishing for speckled trout. And again, we work very closely with the haul staining people, especially in the Pecosin Flats, you know, because of the fact that, you know, they know that we're watching this and they're concerned that any additional scarring might have us come back to the commission to bring additional issues with regard to protection. And again, part of the presentation that I was going to make today regarding that is that, you know, scarring has really been minimal the last few years. And I think by working with the commission and the staff and the hall staners, I think it's worked really well in terms of keeping that scarring to a bare minimum, what I would consider an acceptable level,
right,
so that we wouldn't have any additional regulations on the hall staners because there's so few of them. There's just not a lot of hall staners out there. They're working primarily in Pecosin Flats and in the Mob Jack, and that's about it. That's where we see most of the haul staining occurring. There might be, what, four or five operations?
The wrap. Any other questions on this issue? All right. Thank you, Dr. Orton. Appreciate it. We'll get back to you on the rest of this shortly. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to be heard on this matter one way or another? Mr. Vigliotti, you're the applicant. Please come forward. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
John Vigliotti.
Thank you.
Can I give these?
Sure. We're going to need to keep these for 30 days.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I don't need copies. Basically, what was said here, what I'm looking for, my reason for putting the application in, was because I'm looking for a certain depth that works good for us with our oyster cages. And it's about 5 to 12 feet is perfect for us. If we put our oyster cages any deeper than that, and in the Weir River you can, and we, the existing piece to the, and over here is one that we use currently. If we go too far out and get too deep, it gets very muddy. And if we go over like 12 feet, what will happen is during the summer months, the oysters will go in opposite and everything will die. On the flip side, if we go in too shallow, you know, we have to worry about people hitting the structures. We have to worry about the low, you know, winter tides where stuff would freeze, and that could be also be an issue for us. So the reason why I put this application, at first I didn't realize it was public grounds, as Mr. Stagg had mentioned last at your last meeting. So I said, oh, that's perfect. I'll just apply. And then that's when the whole public grounds thing came up. And there's a ledge that is just perfect, or that runs off of Jarvis Point and goes back out. There's also another ledge off of Windmill Point. The areas that we would like to apply for in leasing run that approximate 5 to 12 feet in depth. It just so happens that that ledge is fairly narrow on the piece that I have right now. And if you look on the GPS map, you can see that in the piece that we've applied for, it widens out. So it's a pretty good section. The reason why, and we have a fair amount of grounds already
in the Ware River. But the reason why we wanted to apply for this additional piece was because we're doing a crop rotation kind of thing. We've gone to. So when we plant our cages, we like to move them from like 1 year, move them to a different spot and leave that spot vacant and let the grounds pretty much get back to whatever, you know, normal is for those grounds. To address the SAV, there is, yeah, right along the shoreline, and you can see on the GPS picture the green, right? Yeah, but we don't want to go anywhere near there. We're going to be offshore of that. It's not in the best interest to be that shallow. As far as, you know, the Hall Seiners, yeah, you're right, in the areas that off of Ware Point, that is a popular place. I've seen them out there, and also across the river off of, on the North River side, there's a lot of places in there that they like. I have never seen them in that Jarvis Point area. That's not to say, I mean, I'm not an authority on that, but I have never seen them in that area in the times. And I'm out there pretty often. I was out there Sunday, to give you an idea. So, you know, to give you an idea how often we are out there, we're almost 5-6 days a week, but I have never seen anybody else standing in that area in the times that I are. We used to see patent congers working out there in the past. When they did work, they worked on the, in this area in here is where I saw them, in that edge in here. In fact, actually, they went over in here some too, but I haven't seen many people in a long time because there just doesn't seem to be any recruitment of clams coming back in that area. Other than that, that's our reasons for the application, and hopefully you'll look favorable on it. Do you have any questions?
Mr. Ballard.
If I'm correct, you are a buyer of wild clams in the area, right?
I am.
So you, if there were clams there, you would have an extreme interest in actually having those harvested and keeping that as clam ground.
Exactly.
Okay.
The last person that worked in there that sold to me was probably about six years ago. And I haven't, like I said, I haven't even seen any activity out there lately. That's not to say I'm not an expert on it. I don't want to, you know, say that I am.
Any other question? Mr. Erskine.
The proposal that you had or the application that you had is to the north of that piece of smaller piece of baler ground there.
Right.
And what size is that request? What size in terms of acres?
When we originally put it in, it was for 100 acres, right? There's a significant part of that that is too deep. So what we would like to do and what we could narrow it down to a smaller piece if that was necessary. In fact, actually, I would actually prefer that because I can't use the deeper part anyway.
And what is a follow-up?
Yeah, that's her.
And what is, if you know, or maybe Mr. Stagg knows, what the overall size of that public clam ground that was set aside in 1930 is?
I don't know what the size of the 1930 piece was. One other thing about the yacht club, it's not a marina, it's a yacht club. And they do sailing, and it is open year-round. It's not a condemned area of any shape or form. The yacht club is over in this area here. And they have their goddess in front of their place. We would definitely not want to in any way interfere with anything that they do.
I think it's somewhere in the 300 to 400 acres range.
Okay.
It's not real large, but it's...
Thank you.
100 acres right here. I thought I had that figure. It may be more than that, but it's definitely less than 1,000 acres. I would guess it's anywhere from 500 to 700 acres. This is about 100 acres here, so you figure that box where his application is. Multiply that box. Yeah, I think it's less than 1,000.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Vigliotta. Someone else wish to testify? Please come forward. Were you sworn in before, Mr. Green?
Pardon?
Were you sworn in earlier?
No.
All right. Do you hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self God?
Well, may God.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Richard Green. I got a little mixed feelings on this particular deal.
being that it is public ground. And once you start chipping away at public ground, where do you stop? That's been the question before y'all already. So you want this little piece, then somebody else is going to want this little area. And if it's able to start chipping at it, it's like a block of ice. You wind up with nothing. And the public, so much of the public ground is being chipped at anyway and being worked, I guess, you know, to the point where you need to keep these areas open, especially with the clamming. Clamming is a little different than other things like oyster and things, because clams tend to strike in areas, and then the guys will work it down, and it might be years before they'll come back to this particular area. It might not have worked in that in 5-10 years, but it doesn't mean that they won't come back and work it, because it depends on the strike. They got places all over the bay, Mob Jack, York River, James River, all around the back. And as they work these areas down, they tend to go to other areas. And they've got to have large quantities of areas in order to be able to keep working. If not, if they get to one little area, then you know how that's going to do. It's going to congest right down to where they clean it up and do their business. And clamming has been a very, very productive business in years past. Lately, it's been on a downcline. I think maybe a lot of it's due to the water quality and the reproduction of the clams. But they are beginning to show a comeback again. I've been having some friends of mine, and it looked like it's getting ready to go on the rise again, because clamming is always a up and down business. It's never a particular steady all the time. It's, you get peaks, and then you've got very, very good clamming, then it gets weak. I'm not really opposed to the application in a sense, but I'm opposed to chipping away at that ground that's been set aside by the commission and the bailiffs. And I think these are more or less should be sacred, and they should be kept that way. Now, I'd love to go put in for a piece of this, you know. That'd be great, but you know, I think the serving the masses may overtake the serving of a few, you know. But I think it should be kept open for the fact that once you start chipping at it, where do you stop? You know, somebody else is going to come up with a very good idea, and they're going to lay out a real good plan and set it before you, and it's going to sound great. And then they're going to want their little chunk, and this next one is going to keep on going. And that's the way I feel about it. So, and I think I'm pretty close.
Any questions from Mr. Green? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Anyone else wish to address the commission on this matter? Well, matters before the commission. What do you want to do? It seems to me, just kind of try to clarify and solidify the issues at hand. As I thought I heard, this area is set aside in 1930 at the request of 13 clammers. So here we are 85 years later. The question is this still the best use of these public water bottoms? I don't know. Mr. Erskine.
And I appreciate that comment. I think what I'm looking at with this proposal is adaptively managing some of our areas that we have in the Commonwealth. And I would ask us to think back to our January commission meeting where we had lengthy discussion about, I think it was up to 4 areas over on the Eastern Shore for SAV set aside, which actually totaled over 1,500 acres. And we had little problem approving over 1,200 acres of that to set that aside. Maybe not in perpetuity, but we certainly set it aside where it would not be leasable. I think that if this was an area that we or the commission had heard a lot of protest from hall seiners or clammers, then that would be a conflict, user conflict. It seems to me that there's areas of this large 1930 set aside that is actively commercially harvested with hall seine and maybe some clamming activity, but I think the applicant is asking for a fairly small portion of this area. And I think if we manage our grounds to make them as economically productive and ecologically productive as possible, then this seems to me to be a reasonable use of that small area. So I think it's not really against what we do to allow this, to allow a portion of it to go back, having seen what we did last, you know, January, set aside.
I also think it's instructive to note that this is ground set aside by the commission. It wasn't set aside
by the General Assembly. This wasn't part of the Baylor survey. This was something that this commission did 85 years ago, clearly for a reason. I guess to me the question is that reason still valid 85 years later. Mr. Bell.
And it seems to me that the reason it was set aside was for public clam grounds, not for hall seining, not for sailing, other activities. Those can all be debated in the actual leasing process and that the specific lease applications. But it seems to me the question before us is this used as public clam ground? And if not, is there a better use of state-owned bottoms that could be leasing or could be any other activities?
Mr. Close.
So I'm just gathering here. So, in other words, if we lease these grounds, we're just giving up on wild-caught clams, period.
From that area, yes.
Okay. That's just...
Well, we don't have to lease the whole thing.
Well,
we don't have to lease any of it.
Right.
We might want to lease only a couple parts of it.
I'm just saying if it is leased, we're just, you know, then the commission is just willing just to give it up, whether it's ever want to strike again, naturally produce.
Okay.
Question for Mr. Sag. You said you did speak, some of the clamors did call in reference to this, and they didn't have a problem with his specific request?
I think at the time they called, they wanted more information, and we specifically told them kind of what we told you today, what drove this request to start with, which was this application-specific site. And the input we got from the couple of clamors that we talked to was that they again, had some concern about chipping away at these grounds, but that they did not work this far up. Now, that didn't include all the way down to what we've recommended. I don't know for sure, but they specifically said, you know, we don't clam that far up. So, again, that you know, you can weigh that as to whether removing this entire area is warranted or some smaller subsection of it. But and in light of that, I would go back to Mr. Rudiger's suggestion that to go from this point to this point. I don't think from the way I read the minutes that this was really a way they were asking for even back in 1930. They were asking for somewhere down in this area, I believe. And he said, let's include, because it says in there, he suggested including an area all the way up to Jarvis Point to Windmill Point, which seemed to indicate to me that he was expanding it slightly to the west from what was really being asked for. But it just made it an easy area to delineate. And obviously, the public had a chance to comment back then, and that's what the commission accepted, and that's where the line's been ever since.
Thank you.
Mr. Close.
If he's asking for the certain places where nobody's clamming, or nobody's, you know, doing anything, why are we asking for all the rest of it?
Well, again, that's why we brought it to the commission. We had to have some recommendation, and again, as I told you, you know, my initial, when I first started evaluating this, was to recommend just these areas, but after talking to our repletion department and getting input from law enforcement and everybody else and not receiving any real comments from clamors that, you know, that they clam really in any of this area of this 1930 area, we decided, well, it would be easy to just remove the whole thing because it's a preset area that's already defined. If we do something else, we have to redefine a smaller area, but we can certainly do that. Again, law enforcement said, if any of this is removed, we'll enforce it wherever the line is. With modern technology, we can enforce these lines much easier than when you needed a geographic point that you could visually see. So,
well, it seems to me that if we went with option B, with these two areas here, the commission would be kind of reconfirming the set aside for the rest of the area. So I think that's, Mr. Close, from my perspective here, I think that's what Mr. Stagg has done here. If we have an application and an interest in one small area, the question is whether or not all of this is still applicable. It depends on how you want to split the baby.
Yeah, but it's once you do that, then all of it can bring in front of the commission at any given time, all of it, the whole. Like I say, I don't have a problem with some of it. I just have a problem with the whole acreage part of it. Because once you start blocking this, it's going to be gone just like that.
Well, I guess I would say that if we went with option B like this, I think I would kind of prefer to have an affirmation or a reaffirmation of the set aside from 1930 for the rest of this. Because otherwise, we're going to be dealing with this on a piece by piece basis, ad infinitum. I mean, that's kind of my thinking on it. Mr. Zedra.
If nobody's asking for the bottom part, why are we considering releasing it?
Mr. Vigliotti has expressed an interest in that area as well. He hasn't put in another application. He gave us an application, but no fee yet. So, in essence, he hasn't really applied, but we know he is interested in that area. And it's very similar to the area to the north. But it's still up to the commission. What drove this original request was the application to the north.
Mr. Zedra.
When I'm in court, you know, we deal with what's before us in court, not what we speculate. And I think that this commission ought to deal with is what's before the commission, not speculate on what may happen down in the bottom part there. I think we ought to address what's before the commission is the application of the parcel in the top.
Any other thoughts?
Just so you know, these two areas, I do have the exact acreage of these two areas as you see them on the map. The northern area is 137 acres as I drew it, and the southern area is 142 acres. So that's the two areas you see there.
Mr. Erskine.
The 137 acres is quite a large area to do shellfish aquaculture. You can grow a lot of oysters in that area in cages. And I think it's a reasonable use and adaptively managing this area where it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of commercial activity. This has been public noticed, and you've had some comment, not necessarily opposition. And I would make a motion to approve the northernmost area, the 137 acres, that would be available for Mr. Vigliotto to lease and approve that, his request for application.
I second it.
Just to clarify, the black box you see is just a graphic that I did that I thought would be easy to define because we'd start with this corner and go on this same bearing, mm-hmm. shore, and there actually is a road here we could reference as to where this hit land. Again, we probably would not lease this area up here because it has SAD, but it's easier to just remove a block from the public ground and say it's potentially leasable, and then we'd address it. I don't believe Mr. Vigliotti even wants, as he stated earlier, this entire area he applied for. He wants a smaller subset inside of that. We'd survey whatever he wanted as part of his application, and that would be subject to the public interest review.
Can I ask for a clarification for the motion? Mr. Erskine, are you motioning to make this ground available for leasing and through the normal leasing process?
Yes. As requested by staff.
Okay. And that's the second by Mr. Zedra here. All right. Is there more discussion on this? Okay. Well, then the matter is before the commission here. We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
No.
No by Mr. Close? The chair votes aye. This motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Stack.